Welcome to the Ortho Joe Podcast, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. Join hosts Mohit Bhandari and Mark Swankowski as they discuss current topics and publications in the world of orthopedics and beyond.
Well, good afternoon, Mo.
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. our listeners and viewers, we need to just disclose that we tried to do this earlier this morning and had bandwidth problems and technical glitches. So we had to reschedule on the fly, and thankfully we're able to do it, but I bet you don't have Tim Hortons handy.
Oh. At all. I always have my Tim Hortons. I have my Tim Hortons. It's my afternoon. Remember, I'm still on jet lag time, Mark. Right now it's about 2:30 in the morning in Japan, and I feel like I could easily be sleeping. But right now I'm keeping my eyes open, excited to chat. Can't wait.
Yeah, well, I'm doing this from home, so I just have a latte. I'd show you the top with the little chocolate powder sprinkles, but it would spill on my laptop. So anyway, so yeah. So what we're going to talk about today is the fact that this podcast, Ortho Joe, is 1 month away from being 4 years old, and this is our 100th recording. It's quite amazing. We started it as a collaboration between Ortho Evidence and JBJS, therefore the J for the journal and OE for Ortho Evidence. That gave us the Joe. But it's just been an amazing run. And it seems as if there are people out there who don't have enough to do and keep downloading these things. So it seems to have a future. But I thought what would be fun to do would be to go through and discuss two, three of our favorites. Sure. And I am going to start out with, and you'll notice that I am wearing the JBJS tie.
You are.
I am, because one of my very favorites was recording number 45, when we had two guests, Liza Arndt and Herman Joel, and we discussed physician etiquette and attire in dressing patients. And we had a healthy debate. And at times I've gone back to golf shirts on this Zoom and been back and forth, but I'm wearing the tie to just show that I'm rigid and non-conforming to the trend in public. I know we've had a lot of fun with this, but let's just be serious now for a second. Okay. You are, without a doubt, the most experienced clinical researcher in the field of orthopedics. And I know you'll poo-poo that, but I know that many in the world know that. So in all seriousness,
Okay.
You wanted to design a trial to determine whether or not casual dress in the clinic, be it scrubs or a sports shirt or whatever, versus a tie and a white coat, how would you do that?
You know, I mean, so all my biases aside, right? Mark, it would depend, right? So if I genuinely believe that not wearing a tie and not having the white coat and the tie, it's going to have less effect. I'm going to try to set my patient, you want the right patient population, you want the right outcome. So if it's about patient perceptions,
yes,
I think we'd lose on that. I don't think casual wear is going to, win on that. However, if we set a trial in which we looked at, how do you feel about that long tie dangling in the wound as you're doing the wound check? Or how do you feel about all that? They may not feel great about it, patients, but I can tell you that, the outcomes might be one that we'd be evaluating. And I think there has been a little bit of that work already done around ties particularly. But that being said, it would certainly be a randomized clinical trial. It would be a patient-important outcome. And if I really wanted to put ourselves, the non-tie wearing generation of clinicians and healthcare providers, to the test in terms of hopefully, then I think we'd also have to find the right generation of patients who might more likely appreciate the more casual look than the more professional, learned look that you certainly always have. Our job is going to be have to convince them that we actually know something when we're not wearing our tie and our jacket. And but it's okay, you know, it's okay. We can figure that out. But overall, I think you're right. I think at the individual level, you have to wear what makes you feel comfortable, Mark. And I know that you personally have made a lot of strides. I mean, you know, unprovoked, you've come in with no tie a couple of times, right?
Yeah, I have. I have indeed.
Right.
So I'm trying it on to see how it feels, and it never feels great. So
I will tell you, though, it's interesting. Many, many boardrooms now and many leadership teams within the orthopedic community, you're seeing, you know, you are seeing a very diverse group of phenotypes around the use of, you know, casual outfits versus ties. And I would say it's almost 50-50. In fact, I might even say that my side might be even taking a bit of a lead right now. So,
I'm sure of that. I'm absolutely sure of that. I'm definitely in a curmudgeon position, Ben. And I know it's a bit tongue in cheek about your ability to skew the trial outcomes by how you design it, because you would never do that if you were going to invest all the effort in a trial.
No. But, I think what we do, I mean, all jokes aside, you're right. You would want to do something that has, I mean, the outcomes, you know, matter, right? So, and you pick all the variety of outcomes. And I'm sure that, you know, the answer we would get, we would both live by, you know, I would accept it. Whatever the answer is, I would accept it, Mark. And if I had to go back and wear a tie, I would absolutely do that. That's what the data tells us. I would do that.
Yeah. Well, I know you would. And maybe some listener will decide to do a trial. And let me just offer up yourself as a consultant in trial design to make sure that it's adequately powered, because it's all about numbers. As you've said on this podcast before, it needs to be a big trial.
That's right.
The whole span of generational issues, et cetera. But how about you? What's one that's high on your list?
Well, you know, I also went back to the first season, 2021. And I think what was particularly interesting to me was how I think relevant this particular topic was to what just happened. So, you know, for those of us who are listening or watching who aren't aware, the 2024 Nobel Prize in Physics was awarded to two scientists, John Hopfield and Geoffrey Hinton, one from Princeton, the other from the University of Toronto, for their foundational discoveries and inventions that enable machine learning and artificial neural networks. And you'll recall, Mark, early on, and it would have been maybe the 18th episode or so, where we started talking, we had a specific episode that was based on artificial intelligence, machine learning, and neural networks, because this became the new language. And we had Joey Silbert, who was a data scientist from OrthoEvidence. And I think what I liked about that was, at that time, in your role as the editor-in-chief, you had brought up that we're seeing more and more of this paper design, and we're going to have to really understand this new language. And it is just amazing that in that short 2 or 3 years from when we had this podcast, just how different the world is and how transformational I think the ideas that our artificial intelligence are going to be on humanity. So for me, I think that was the big thing. It struck me with the recent Nobel Prize in physics sort of announcement that, you know, maybe Ortho Joe itself was also thinking, you know, along some of the lines of where the future is taking us.
Yeah, that's true. And that was before the large language model avalanche that's happened since December of 22, I believe it was. And it's going to be something that increasingly we're going to deal with in scholarly publication, and will be a challenge to you as the editor. And what's your feeling about what it'll look like in 5-10 years as far as the submission profile in this area?
Well, you know, I went back and looked a little bit at the history, and I looked particularly at Geoffrey Hinton, who's considered one of the, quote, godfathers of machine learning and AI development. And it's interesting, too, right? By the way, their early paper, Hopfield's paper, the original paper, I think, on which this whole, on the Nobel Prize is based, 40-some-odd years ago, they had the original paper on this topic. And what's fascinating to me is they had such an idea that it took many, many years for the actual industry, have the infrastructure, the speed, the chips, whatever it may be, the capacity to actually enable this. And, you know, at the end of November of 2022 is when we really started seeing things happen. No one had heard of ChatGPT-3 in early November, right? And it just kicked in. in early 2020, right? Like no one had heard about it. So it's really a recent phenomena, and it's amazing how quickly people have adopted it. The thing that was interesting, though, to your question, Geoffrey Hinton, as I understand, was a major scientist in Google's DeepMind. He actually left Google DeepMind because he wanted to be able to speak openly, not only about the all the successes associated with AI in the future, but also the dangers of AI. So he wanted to be able to speak openly about those challenges. And I tell you, it is interesting. Like it is very interesting to me, how quickly it's being adopted. And I don't know if we're going to be able to, I think you had mentioned to me before, well, the world's going to have to figure out these quote guardrails, but who's going to set the guardrails? And, when something is financially motivated, like social media was a great example of that, Mark, The idea of social media is a great one, right? We want to connect the world, and there's so many great things that were purported to have happened because of that early phase. And what made it problematic was they incentivized it for monetary gain. So the minute you incentivized financial gain, companies started creating algorithms that basically get people addicted, especially young people addicted. And they feed them information and they create these quote algorithms that create real mental health issues and anxiety in their generation that we never thought that would be. So the fear is what happens, AI in itself sounds amazing, but minute it gets incentivized and you're seeing there's only going to be three or four holders of all the knowledge that is AI, we're in the same, right? There is some scariness around that.
Yeah, one of the other people that we did interview was Kent Anderson, the former CEO. And Kent has been all over this phenomenon of the business model of the big companies being click-based. And the fact that when you have outrageous things posted or untruths and how it really does damage the social fabric of the United States because the business model is based on clicks. And not on a subscription model. And I know that Congress has gotten interest in this, and maybe post-election, there seems to be bipartisan support to do something about that business model of clicks for money.
Absolutely. And we'll see how far they'll get, right? And that's the challenge. I mean, everyone has great intentions, but ultimately you have to act on those and affect change. So let's see what happens.
Another one for me was the interview that we did with Clarence Shields, who was the first Black team physician in the National Football League for the LA Rams, and Joel Boyd, my partner, who's the first Black physician for the NHL, on the issue of underrepresented minority team physicians and where we can go with that. And throughout the 100-episode history of OrthoJoe, we have interviewed many groups of people on the issues of DEI, starting from the outset, and continue to do that because we do have a long way to go in terms of equal representation in our field of orthopedic surgery from underrepresented minorities. And we made some progress with women, but almost no progress with the other minorities we'd like to see in greater numbers in our specialty. But that one was particularly moving to hear Dr. Shields and Dr. Boyd discuss their road to get to those positions and issues that they've had to deal with and what their dreams are for the future of those positions in professional sport.
Yeah, I mean, again, another great choice. It is incredible, again, and I do think it's changed. I mean, I think you'd agree, Mark, that, if we look maybe back 5 years and we look now, there is definitely change. Now, one might argue that, yes, we may look a little more diverse and hopefully, that diversity is also leading to individuals feeling more included towards the pathway towards equity. And we've got many, many champions that have, emerged in our orthopedic landscape, so to speak, in our community to help us in that area. However, to your point, I think we have still lots and lots of opportunity to continue to do this. And I think from my perspective, I am noticing, and certainly we're being far more deliberate as you were and as have been, both at the Journal and in every other aspect of your life, I'm sure. about, you know, really looking carefully and advocating for diversity on all the different panels we're on, advocating for diversity in the boards that we participate in, and more importantly, thinking about just diversity within our research. Now, diversity, as you said, as I mentioned, isn't enough, and we have to make sure that we feel, make everybody feel included and part of, you know, this greater mission that we all hope, which is advancing, you know, musculoskeletal care around the world, as it relates to the journal anyway. But yeah, what a great choice.
So, okay, what's another one for you?
So I've got one here, which I think also really was your brainchild, but I think you enacted it around, I think it would have been 2022, and there was a section that was added to the journal, which is near and dear to my heart, which is the idea of the arts and humanities being added to the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery. And you had Bob Skanke involved in this as the special guest editor for this section, or the deputy editor for arts and humanities. And what particularly I loved about that discussion was really, you know, this idea that orthopedic, you know, the orthopedic community, whether it's residents, trainees, those who work within us, the physician assistants, the scientists, the, you know, other healthcare practitioners that are allied to the field, all of us as a community are more than just what people perceive from our job titles. And, you know, if I can quote what that section was about, and as it was written in that particular podcast, which was the arts and humanities with an emphasis on the value maintaining a healthy work-life balance, the trickle-down benefits of exploring and cultivating one's creative side, and the relationship between art and wellness. And for me, I think that was a important recognition to those of us who believe that we are more than our job title and have much more to offer the world. And I was really pleasantly surprised to see kind of the degree of interest in this, not just in, at the JBJS, Mark, but I think when you start looking for this, you see it everywhere. And we're starting to see this becoming more and more important, especially in the age of AI. You know, being human is going to be one of the key differentiators, I think.
Yeah. Well, you were kind enough to do the first submission and do a self-portrait in watercolor. And for those that are listening or watching and you don't know, Mo is really quite a talented artist who intentionally went back after a passion earlier in his life to recoup that ground to have a more balanced life. So you've taken your own advice and really made a focus on it, and you are to be commended for that. One other one that I will just shout out as my last choice. I mean, we could talk about every one, but
yeah,
we had Michelle Garrett on.
Yeah,
who talked about the Parity supplement. Parity was a large randomized trial done in the musculoskeletal oncology treatment on two different postoperative courses of antibiotics, the standard 24 hours versus 5 days, a massive undertaking, and really one of the first in that subspecialty. And Michelle had partnered with our open access journal to publish, I believe it was 12 different secondary analyses that were pre-planned, and to just see a subspecialty that's really working together to advance knowledge was particularly energizing for us at the journal at the time.
Yeah, and I mean, I had I had really sort of a I would say backseat look exactly what was happening, because Michelle, being a faculty member at McMaster University at that time, was really, really just motivated to build a network together and collaboratively and build this team. And you know, Mark, how hard that is, having done it numerous times in the past too. It's really hard to get everyone aligned on a question and ultimately to get over that finish line. So such an impressive, you know, feat. And the thing that really gets me excited about that particular work in general is it makes it possible for other people who may be listening or watching or participating to say, you know what? I think we can do this. I think we can come together and do the same thing, because once it's, you know, it's always impossible until someone does it. And then suddenly it's like, oh yeah, okay, this is doable. So absolutely. And, you know, if I jump in parallel this, a big part of my just general joy of this, of being on, having the privilege to be part of this podcast, and every time we chat, was the ability to connect with humans and be, you know, you and I, I've had some great conversations, and you know, I can't think of the number of hundreds of conversations we've had that were part of this podcast that I've enjoyed every minute of them. But I'm going to cheat a little bit by saying, for me, one of the other key highlights was our ability to interact with, you know, Joe Schatzker and Marv Tile. And that
Was a great one.
Bob Winquist, you know, talking about his life. Yeah. Chapman, you know, talking about his life. Alan Gross talking about his life, you know. And I can go on and keep going, but it's just lots and lots and lots of history. I think we've probably covered centuries of history, you know, in those four or five podcasts. And to me, everyone knows about the individuals and everyone knows about their academics, but it was the little stories that, you know, that happened in the corners, that happened in the quiet rooms, that came to light half the time, right? The things that, you know, they were thinking that we would have no idea they were thinking in the moments, you know, where they were out there presenting or doing something or choosing a career path. Those stories will forever be part of, you know, my own makeup. And I learned a lot from those. And I hope, and I know as we continue into the new year, that we'll continue to find, you know, just additional exceptional people to communicate with as we do and continue to do on Ortho Joe.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to keep on doing this as long as there are people that want to listen. So sign me up.
Absolutely. And you know what? For those who are listeners and who do take a moment to spend a little bit of time with us, maybe 30 minutes or so of your busy, busy lives, if you have ideas for guests, if you have ideas for topics, if you yourself feel you have something you want to share, you got to let us know. Just, you know, send us an email. You can find us in all the various channels. Send a note directly to us, either of us, and we'll do everything we possibly can to accommodate, because our interest is trying to get, you know, stories out and tell stories and, you know, and hopefully in many ways provide, interesting content for all of you who take some time to listen.
That's a great way to end. I know you've got more things to do today, so I've finished my latte.
I've got half a cup of coffee to finish, and I'll get that done. I'll get that done. But I'm wide awake now, you see? I'm wide awake. That's good. Awesome.
Okay. All right. Thanks,
Happy,
Mo.
Happy 100th, Mark. It was awesome.
Indeed. Here's to the next 100.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Cheers.